today I have a guest in the studio. I have David White with me today, and welcome to Talking Up Disability, David.
Thank you very much, Edith.
Welcome to be with us. This is the second time.
Yes.
So you're not feeling any nervousness or anything?
It's good to be here.
Yeah, it is. And I've asked David to come back because he's speaking about a very important subject, and it affects... Does it affect a lot of people? Does dyslexia affect very many people?
Yes, especially if you're male, 1 in 6, I think, but it's a very high number.
Mm. So we're glad to have you here. Tell me a little bit about dyslexia and your story, David.
That's a great question. I view dyslexia, there's a wonderful man who wrote a book called The Gift of Dyslexia, or The Gift of Learning, depending on what edition it is, by Ron Davis. And it explains dyslexia as people are either think in words, so their mind works in words, or they think in pictures. And dyslexic people, or potential dyslexics, think in pictures, so their mind is full of pictures. And then the other thing that plays in is that dyslexics get confused. So it's like a daydream moment, or when you're sitting in a car and a car next to you moves and you get that confusion feeling. So that's what happens when we see words or we see numbers or we see something. Pictures in our mind go all kind of haywire and we get confused, and that causes the issues of input and output confusion. What were you going to say, Edith?
I was just going to say, is it tiring? Is it stressful? I mean, you know, do you feel like you're just one step behind what's happening?
Yeah, the best analogy I have it is that I'm like a duck on the water. Everyone sees that I'm just gliding along, and underneath my legs are going frantically to keep up. And it is very tiring. It depends on what you're doing. Like, if I'm enjoying it, it plays to my strengths, then that's very relaxing, and I love it. But if I'm in a bank, filling out a bank form, or talking to the IRD, or doing something that requires me to focus on the details, the numbers, the words, it's unbelievably stressful and tiring.
So would you think it's a little bit of dysfunction in the concentration or the focusing?
Well, yeah, it's more if you can't get a picture to something, then it's very confusing. For me, like the word "da," there's no... Like elephant, there's a word, there's a picture. We can engage with that. The or and or any of those wonderful English words that is full of them. There's no picture, so it creates confusion.
Yeah, okay.
So if I'm filling out a bank form and there's a word there, or there's a number there, sometimes it can throw me off the deep end. I guess the next question is that I didn't discover I was dyslexic like a lot of people till I was an adult. So it wasn't until I was at university that someone said, you should be tested for dyslexia. And so when I found out, it was like a huge relief that there was a name for something that I'd experienced, and that it wasn't my fault that all these teachers that had basically beat up on me and all these experiences that I had, it was like, well, finally, I wasn't stupid. I wasn't thick. I just didn't need to try harder because I had tried harder and it didn't work and it wasn't my fault. So I guess it was a huge relief with being able to say, hey, I'm dyslexic. Give me a break. And so I'd encourage anyone who is wondering if they're dyslexic to check themselves out so they can say, hey, look, give me a break. Yeah. That's not something I can do because I have dyslexia. And that's brought a lot of freedom to me.
So it's a bit of a burden going off your back in a way.
It is.
Yeah.
And so whenever I go into the bank, because they're like the places of torture for me, so my wonderful wife normally does anything to do with banking, she does, I'll say to the bank teller, look, I'm dyslexic. Can you read over my my form that I've filled out? Because there's likely to be at least one mistake. And so when they don't find a mistake, I feel like $1 million.
Yeah.
and if they do find one or two mistakes, then they're really nice about it because I've been up front. Because, you know, normally there will be a mistake in there somewhere. So everyone's just on the same page.
And you don't have to carry the responsibility of making a mistake.
Exactly, and it brings a lot of freedom. So, and people are very understanding if you're just up front about it.
And David, how has dyslexia affected your daily life with, different challenges? I'm thinking about maybe social skills and relationships and some of those challenges.
Sure. Relationally and socially, the strength of a dyslexic, because they think in pictures, is that for me personally, I can read people very well, which is very helpful. So I can remember one vivid example when I was in my driver's license test. I'd have I'd be watching the road, but I'd have half an eye on my driving instructor. And so if I was going to do anything wrong, his body language would start to change. Mm-hmm. I'd think, I'm doing something wrong here. And then I could think quick enough to go rescan, recheck. Oh, look, there's a car coming the other way. You know, we're about to have an accident. Mm-hmm. I better do something. Mm-hmm. So, but the flip side of that is that, because I guess I developed that skill because in a classroom situation, when you're doing something wrong, the teacher's body language starts to change, and so you can you can correct things on the fly.
Mm.
But what it means is that now as an adult, and I'm dealing with adults, I overread too much into people's body language. So if I'm in a meeting with someone and someone's body language starts to change, I immediately think, oh, I must be doing something wrong. I'm offending the person, or I'm saying something that's getting them upset.
Mm.
Whereas in reality, they could have just had a bad night last night and they're feeling tired.
Mm. Yes, do you think because you're continually scanning, you've got all your antennas up scanning the situation for clues, that you become a little oversensitive?
Yes, I do, yeah. And it becomes a real challenge when then you need to move forward on a project and maybe someone's not happy about that. Then it becomes I get caught up in thinking about what this person's thinking, whereas in most of the time they're not really actually thinking about that. Yes, and then I wear myself out worrying about all of these things and what people are thinking. So it's not very healthy long term.
No.
So, yes.
But you've developed strong friends and you are a churchgoer. You have quite an involvement in church. You must have a community that's around you that...
Well, that's an interesting comment. I guess for a long time because I was good at reading people, but I wasn't good at making friends.
Mm.
So I lacked the social ability to take an acquaintance to a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only a skill I would have said that I really actively, because most of my social skills I've actually had to actively work at.
Mm.
So I was one of these clueless, geeky, people through my teenage years. And through my 20s, I kind of had to actively work at stuff. And so... it's only been the last 4 years I would have said that I would have developed friendships that are real because I didn't know that there were friendships that were real. If that makes sense, I didn't understand what – I understood what acquaintances were, but I didn't understand what friendships were and how you related and interacted with a friend. So, now I have a handful of friends, but I wouldn't say I have lots of friends are well-connected into a community as such. So.
Do you think you might have been suspicious of people? Of their motives or?
Suspicious? No, I'm not generally suspicious. I'm quite open. My wife's normally the suspicious one. But ironically, she has lots of friends. So I guess I am unsure of it, or I have learnt what relational intimacy is. So I was never good at, because friends, you have different levels of intimacy depending on the appropriateness. And I never understood that. So I would be kind of shallow with people I should be deep with and deep people I should be shallow. So all of that I've had to work through as an adult and it's been one hell of a journey. Not necessarily easy. So yes, it's been a very active process where someone like my wife, she just knows.
Yeah.
She just relates.
And it's probably good because you can pick up clues from her and sort of follow the lead a little bit.
Yeah, a lot. And we'd go out to a social situation at a party and often I still do it today driving home, I'd say, what went on there? Like, you had this interaction, or this went on, and these people did that. And I said, what was that about? And she would unpack that.
Yeah.
So I'd go, this,
filling in the gaps a little bit.
Exactly. So it's coaching me in that. So it's really helpful.
Yeah. So that was one of the questions I was going to ask you about some of these challenges and the aspects of having dyslexia. Are they getting easier as you mature and as time goes by, or do you find you have maybe an episode of depression that might trigger it again, or how does that working at this stage as you're maturing?
Well, I guess there's a number of things at play. One's the normal rhythm of life. So when I'm tired or hungry or stressed or depressed or any of those things come into play, then the issues with dyslexia come to the forefront. And I feel that. I can feel like I'll never write in the afternoon because I don't concentrate well in the afternoon, so I just don't even bother. But because dyslexia had a label, it had a name for me, and so therefore it's a problem to be solved, and so therefore I could actively work on something, and once I've actively worked on something for a number of years, then I've mastered it, and then I can kind of move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So then things become easier. So I've started to master friendships, so I'm comfortable in that, and so therefore we can then start to master other things.
Mm.
And I'm comfortable with my writing style and my report writing style, and comfortable knowing when to edit and who to ask to edit. And so so I've kind of mastered that area of the, of the dyslexia. It's more of the relational area, the emotional area and things like that I've kind of working on actively now.
Yeah.
So it's been easier, yes. I'm glad that I'm 30 now, not 20 or 10.
Yeah, and I think in some ways as we age, we're a little kinder on ourselves too. We don't sort of feel we have to be superhuman beings all the time and do everything right all the time.
And you know, I'm comfortable with the fact that I'm a useless editor. Don't ask me to edit something. No, no, no. And that's cool. Whereas
it's
20.
That's good. You know your limitations.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, whereas when you're at school or trying to, you're first starting a new job, you want to be a superhuman.
Yeah.
Always get things right. Mm. You know, immortal kind of teenager, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, but I think when you have some challenges in life, whether it's a physical or a sensory or an intellectual disability, there's always that extra trying.
Exactly. And because people tell you just try harder, just do more. And so you do. But then I guess there's that grace of, I guess, age that says, well, no, actually, that sphere I'm not good at. Mm. Let's concentrate on what I'm good at.
Yeah.
And let's not get hung up over these things.
And as you age too, you've got nothing to prove. I mean, you know, you've still got things to prove, but I mean, you can accept yourself a little more.
Exactly.
And other people can accept you.
Kind of running riot.
And would you like to just say something at the end here?
Well, it's been great to be here, Edith. I guess today we've concentrated on the negative side of dyslexia, but there's a whole positive side that because we think differently to other people, we can see things that other people can't see. Mm. So the fact that I'm a world-class researcher, you know, it's the double-edged sword that I'm also really bad at writing those results up.
Mm.
And same with the people I've worked with. The dyslexic people are very sharp, very intelligent, very intuitive, ability to see things other people can't see. And so there's a whole blessing that goes with that. And so my encouragement would be if you've got someone who's dyslexic or who thinks dyslexic, encourage them to focus on their strengths because they will have strengths that will be very positive and allow them to engage in a positive way. So, you know, we'll minimise the weaknesses, but let's focus on the strengths. Yeah.
And I find that with quite a few forms of disability is there's a compensation going on there and a sort of an overdevelopment, which is, as you say, a real blessing.
Yes, it is a blessing.
And,
you just have to remember that on the bad days when, you know, life's feeling like miserable. Yeah. You're just going to go, well, let's look at the positive.
Let's look at the positive, and that's exactly what we do here. So thank you for coming in today,
David.